This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this January 10th edition of Invest Talk, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. And we hope you feel welcome to bring your questions to the table. I mean, I do want to hear them. You drive the show. And in a minute, I'll get to one of those that came in before today's program. But I really would like you to call and ask your questions. Simple, complex, whatever you want to ask. If it's too complex for me, I'll say so. But please do call. Now, what concerns you most as you prepare for retirement, what is your biggest concern? Maybe I could break those down a little bit, those concerns. The biggest concern is growing the money, right? Making a profit. I would say that's the number one. Another concern should be minimizing risks to some degree. And so you want to also know what kind of income you can derive from your investments. Is it driving income? I think people forget that, 30-40% of the return to the S&P 500 over a long period of time is the dividends. So you do want some income to help drive the value of the portfolio higher. So you have these three concerns, and you have to address them, and you have to address them by using a strategy to address them. Want to grow the money, minimize risks, and drive some income into your portfolio. Well, you got to have a strategy. Maybe your strategy is just buy and hold. Okay, well, that is a strategy. Can you buy and hold when the next downturn comes? Whenever that might be. By the way, we haven't seen one in well over a year. Not even a minor one, really. So, but what happens when you get a decent correction? Are you going to be able to maintain your buy and hold strategy? That's important. You got to be able to maintain that. There's all kinds of different strategies to do. You can do dollar cost averaging. You know, that's a different type of way to invest into the market. You could do dogs of the Dow. You could do the Ken Slim method. I can't tell you how many strategies. There's a bazillion of them. So you have to decide what kind of investor you are and how you want to implement your strategy. So then, before that can happen, you got to develop a strategy. What are you going to do? So if you have any questions about, formulating a strategy or moving forward, how to manage an account, give me a call. 888-99-CHARTER is our number. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. And we're going to go first to talk to Dan in Palo Alto. How you doing, Dan?
Hi, Steve. Very good. Thanks. And thanks for your intro. I had a question related to that, having to do with just hedging and being ready for what you daily, weekly talk about in terms of there being a downturn and correction.
Uh-huh.
It seems like to me just it would be a no-brainer to be buying since it's at its lowest point and as long as I can remember, stock related to the VIX index such that when these events happen, cataclysmic or just a correction, it tends to jump up. And
yep.
So I just wanted to ask you, I bought a half position in TVIX today, and it seemed I did that instead of buying gold. Is my reasoning correct, fallacious?
Your reasoning is not wrong, but buying TVIX or VIXX, which are these ETFs that track the VIX, don't work. And this is why they don't work, Dan. I don't like to just say that and not tell you why. If you look at the actual VIX, you'll see that it goes down to 9, 10, 11, and then bounces, right? Have you seen a chart of that? It goes actually with 9, 10, 11. 9 is very, very low. Then it bounces, then go up to 45, 50 in the recession, go up to 90, but it usually bounces back up to 15, 20. Now go to your TVIX, which is 2x the VIX short. In other words, it will go up if the VIX goes up. Look at the chart of a year, 2 years of that, and look at the chart of the VIX. You'll see that TVIX goes down all the time. It does have its spikes, but it doesn't go flat like the VIX goes flat. And that's because of the way they try to track the VIX. It just can't seem to do it the way they do it. The kinds of things they buy to track the VIX. they keep expiring, and the options that they buy to track it expire worthless, and the value of the portfolio goes down. So it won't do what you want it to do, Dan. It won't do it.
It won't. Okay.
Yeah, it won't.
It won't jump up.
Yeah, it will jump up. I don't want to mislead you. It will jump up, but the in-between times will constantly fall.
I understand.
It won't go flat
now
for
it's down
you.
Around.
Okay?
Gotcha.
Thanks,
Dan. It's
not
going to go back up to 80 if there's
no
correction.
That's right. It won't.
Thanks.
Okay? Appreciate
thanks
the call. Thank you. That was TVIX. I've tried to find something that would track the VIX because I think the idea is very sound. But I can't find anything that really truly tracks the VIX. Not yet. Victor in Wilmington. How you doing, Victor?
Good evening, Steve. Question for you. Back in the 90s, I remember, was a big thing. Like Disney and GE and Lucent and AT&T, yeah, they hit about the $50, $60 mark, and they would split, 2-to-1
right
split,
yeah,
or 3-to-1 split.
Yep.
You don't see that anymore.
Nope.
And I'm curious why, I don't know if everybody's trying to follow Amazon and Google. And my other question was Bollinger Bands or Bollinger.
Uh-huh.
What is that?
Okay, we'll start with Bollinger Bands. Bollinger Bands are they're a standard deviation around the price movement of the stock. Okay, there's a combination of mathematics that make them work, and I don't even know what those are exactly, so don't ask me. But what they do is they try to demonstrate the upward and downward movement in a band, within a range, however you want to call it, they call them bands, of the stock price movement. And if the stock price is near the top of the band, because remember, it's a range that they're trying to track, the theory is that it's going to fall. When it's at the bottom of the band, the theory is it's going to rise. Now, I've been working with Bollinger Bands for years, and I must say, I don't know if I can buy that theory. It doesn't work enough for me. Maybe I'm reading it wrong, maybe I'm doing it wrong, but that's what they're trying to do. When it's at the top of the band, the stock is overpriced and should fall. When at the bottom of the band, it's underpriced and should go up. Now, as far
okay,
that's what they're supposed to be used for. Now, you're right. Stock splitting used to be common in the 90s. That was what they did. Stocks would go up but get close to $100. They'd definitely split. The stock split 2-for-1, keep that price within, I think they like to keep it within like $30, $60 a range, and that's what they did. The only one that didn't do it back then was Warren Buffett with his Berkshire Hathaway stock. He never split it. Never, ever, ever. That's why it costs, what, $200,000-$300,000 a share now, the A shares for him. Now they're
wow.
Yeah, that's what it is. So try to buy one of those shares. You got $200,000-$300,000, you can do it, one share. Anyways, now since the dot-com crash, it seems like not very many companies are interested in splitting anymore. They just let the price go up and up and up. And you know what? I have no reason to give you as to why. What it has done, Victor, it's thrown off the indexes because some of them are priced. That, like if you have a price-weighted index and you have let's say you have Boeing, here's Dow 30. Let's use Dow 30. That Boeing has a price of $320. IBM has a price of $164. Well, that means Boeing has about twice the influence on the Dow as IBM. Is GE still in the index? If it is, that stock's $19. That means Boeing has, what, 200% more influence on the index than General Electric. So General Electric could double in price, and it wouldn't move the index as nearly as much as Boeing because of if an index is weighted by price, which many of them are, some are weighted by market capitalization. It throws off. In other words, they used to keep the prices fairly close, right, Victor? You know, within a certain range.
Yep.
Now they don't. So now bigger, more expensive stocks have more say on the index than the smaller, less expensive stocks. If it's market weighted, then you have companies like, you know, Apple and Google. Those things are hugely market capped, huge market caps. If they go up, their indexes go up fast. If they go down, the indexes go down fast. Other stocks have less importance. So it's kind of thrown off the indexes. People are not paying much attention to that, but that's what's happening. So
Okay, thank you very much.
Appreciate the call, Victor. Thank you for the call. It's a good question. This is InvestTalk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. If you live in the San Jose area, I would love to meet with you and talk about your retirement portfolio if you wish. I do these one-hour sessions with individual investors just about every month in the Bay Area, and I will be there February 7th. And if that date works for you, just go to investtalk.com and look for the InvestTalk tab and then portfolio review. But you and I can still talk before that if you like. If you have a money question or comment, just call 888-99-CHART. Give me a call. Love to talk to you. Have you made friends with balance sheets yet? Balance sheets. Two of the most dreaded words the average investor hears. Okay? They are filled with many lines which are labeled with terms like deferred tax assets, accumulated other comprehensive income. But balance sheets, when you're investing in stocks, you really have to understand what a balance sheet's telling you. They can be your best friend if you're trying to determine if a company is susceptible during the next economic downturn. How susceptible is it to the fall of the market? You know, is it subject to the business cycle? Now, each of the 11 major industries in the market has various levels of sensitivity to the economic swings or the business cycle. Earnings for commodity, retail, finance companies tend to be very cyclical. Commodities and financing companies, okay? Very, very cyclical. Non-cyclical companies can handle a weak balance sheet much better than a cyclical company. And, of course, there's terms like current ratio, debt-to-equity ratios. Do you know what those are? The current ratio is known as the liquidity ratio also. It basically measures whether a company has liquid capital to pay its bills, its near-term bills. Anything above one means they can pay their bills. If it's below one, they must either liquidate something, borrow some money to pay their current bills. These are all terms that are very, very important for you as an investor to learn. Debt to equity ratio. It measures the leverage the company has created. Leverage. Okay, the higher this number is, the weaker the company. They're borrowing. Leverage is saying you can instead of leverage, say borrowing. So it's weak if they borrow too much money. Figure if it rises above 3, you need to start to ask some pretty hard questions. Okay? These are really good terms for you. Now, if you have questions about balance sheets, why not just ask? You can ask them. I can help you with it. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. Janet Yellen will not be the Federal Reserve Chairman this year. So the new chairman will be setting the path of interest rates in 2018. Should we expect much of a change? You can read more about that in Income Marketplace on investtalk.com.
Hi, Justin. Hi, Steve. This is Mark from Houston. Just wanted to ask for your opinion on a company that I'm looking to get into. If you have an entry point, I would really appreciate it. The symbol is HLI. Looking to get into it. I don't own it, and it seems like a very interesting company to own. Looking forward to hearing from you. Thank you very much.
Okay, HLI is Houlihan Lokey Inc. It provides merger and acquisition financing and restructuring services. It's a $3.2 billion company. It's had a very good run, and it's been up sharply in the last 3 days from 46 to 40, almost 49. So, you know, 8-9% in 3 days or so. The company is going to, this is a merger and acquisition finance company. So during the periods of our economy, when there's lots of mergers and acquisitions, this company is going to do well. And of course, with a company economy strong, you're probably going to have merger and acquisitions continuing to go forward. The company hasn't been around that long, you know, nothing before 2012 on it. So we don't know how it will do in a recession. But generally speaking, these kinds of companies do very poorly during that. Right now, with our economic growth accelerating and stock market doing very well, this company is doing very well. The five-year range P.E. ratio is 13 to 22, and right now it's at 22. They're going to make $2.57 next year after making $2.24 this year. They've made more money every year since they IPO'd in 2013. Well, think about that. At the same time, the economy is doing very well. They have good growth rate, 20%, 30% on sales growth, pays a small dividend of 1.6%, very good return on equity. The company is very solid. A buy point would probably be in the mid-40s, probably about 44, 45. Or you just buy it now and you ride it, even though it's probably gotten ahead of itself. You just hold on to it, and it will probably do well going forward until the economy stops doing so well. HLI, Houlihan Lokey Inc. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Our main talking point today has to do with Roth IRAs. The Roth can offer tax benefits, access to funds, ease of use, retirement income benefits that are too attractive to ignore. So we have four reasons to start using a Roth IRA in 2018. So we'll look at that. Plus, I want to talk about some records. Records for the S&P. I'm not talking about the S&P point records, how much it's been up and it's making new highs. I'm not talking about that, but other kind of records it's making. I want to talk about the facts about money for young people, especially those people under 35 years or younger. What are some of the facts that they're suffering under? I see a lot of young people taking very nice vacations, buying big cars. And what are some of the facts about that? Do they have the money? Can they afford those things? You'd be surprised. And new tax law means fighting over unfunded state pension plans. It's going to get a lot worse. The new tax law they just recently passed is going to cause the unfunded state pension plans some big problems. And we'll talk about that. Which states are the most affected? Not California, by the way, just so you know. Not California. Those are going to be our talking points. What do you want to talk about? What's on your mind? I'd be happy to discuss anything on your mind. Now, yesterday, we didn't get to what states $1 million will get you the furthest, and which state it will run out faster, or which states you will keep the money longer. $1 million to retire. And just briefly, the state that would run out the fastest would be Hawaii. Run out in 13 years. This is using the average cost of living for that state. $1 million will run out in 13 years in Hawaii. The state that will last the longest, Kansas. Kansas and Oklahoma, 24 years for both of those. 24 years. So the state that will last the lowest, Hawaii, District of Columbia, California's third after the District of Columbia, 15 years. Isn't that interesting? California, then Oregon, and then New York. So $1 million, boy, from 13 to 24 years, that's a huge difference. So where you live in retirement makes a huge difference in how long your money's going to last. Okay, the market was down today. Dow was down 17 points. The NASDAQ down 10. And the S&P down 3. Well, it was the first down day of the year, I believe. I believe that's true. So, you know, why was it down? Well, before opening today, it was showing much weaker signs because two things. Japan said they're going to start cutting back in 2018 their quantitative easing program, like our Fed did, started a couple of years ago. And China said that they may cut back or sell off some U.S. treasuries. So that kind of worried the market, the bond market especially, has had a bad couple of days. Coming up on the next Invest Talk, 4 proven ways to boost your retirement income. That's one of our topics on the next Invest Talk. But what's your topic today? What do you want to talk about? My direct line between hours of 4 and 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday, is 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next. You've probably been hearing a little bit about the fiduciary laws. They've been postponed, that is, the expansion of the fiduciary laws. But registered investment advisors are bound by these laws from the Security and Exchange Commission. That hasn't changed. Historically, this has been the code of the registered investment advisor. A fiduciary is required to act in the best interest of their clients. Those not bound by the definition of fiduciary are only required to make decisions for their client that are appropriate, but not necessarily in their very best interest. If you have questions about the role of a fiduciary or a registered investment advisor, you're welcome to click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on InvestTalk.com. That's InvestTalk with 2 T's, InvestTalk.com. Now let's get back to the podcast. This is Invest Talk, and we're glad you're here for this two-way conversation about managing your money. Bring your questions to Steve right now. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. 4 reasons to start using a Roth IRA in 2018 instead of your regular IRA. Do you know the difference, Roth versus regular? Roth is an account. Roth IRA is an account that you put money into before it's taxed. In other words, you are taxed on that money. Okay, after it's taxed, I should say. So it's money you put in a Roth IRA after it has been taxed. Then you put that money in a Roth IRA. A regular IRA, you don't pay any tax on it. So you put that in an IRA before it's taxed. So both of them grow tax-free until you start taking them out. In a regular IRA, when you start taking it out, you have to pay income tax on every dollar you take out. Roth, you do not pay any taxes on it ever once you put it in. Remember, you pay taxes on it going in. So what are some of the reasons why you'd use it? Well, of course, it's all tax-free growth, right? Well, for Roth, that growth, you don't ever have to pay taxes on it. You don't ever have to pay taxes on any of that money. But a regular IRA, you do when you start taking it out. It's added to your adjusted gross income, and you pay taxes based on your income tax level the year you take it out. Also, a Roth has a little benefit. You know, the money you put in a Roth, you can take out any time. You don't have to wait till you're 65. The money that you actually put in it, you can take out any time you want. You just can't take out the growth part of that money. So if it goes from, you put in $5,000, and 10 years it goes to $10,000, you can take out the $5,000 anytime you want to. Okay? You don't have to wait till 59 and a half years old. So typically, you are in a lower tax bracket in retirement. So this is where the Roth IRA and the regular IRA starts to get a little different, because remember, you're taxed on the money you put on a Roth. So you're starting off with after-tax dollars, so you're starting at a lower level. In a regular IRA, that money is not taxed when you put it in. But let's say it grows over the years. You're going to be in a very low tax bracket in retirement. So therefore, would it be better to leave it in a regular IRA and let the higher amount grow higher and the lower instead of the Roth? That's a debate. Remember, also, a Roth IRA has no RMD, or required minimum distributions. You never have to take the money out. In a regular IRA, at age 7 and a half, you have to start taking the money out. There's a percentage you have to take out every year because the government wants to tax you on it. So those are some of the differences between those two kinds of programs, retirement accounts. Make sure you understand them before you decide to which one you. I can give you a general rule. Generally, I like a Roth much better when you're young. What's young? Under 40? It as you get close to 60 and up, it doesn't look as good because it doesn't have as long to grow as a regular. The longer you have the live, the let it grow, that you don't have to use it, the better. So usually as you get 60, you're going to start needing that money pretty soon. Anyways, let's talk to Will in San Diego. I want to talk about a Roth. How you doing, Will?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you, Steve. I appreciate you. I finally found you on the
great
tune in and again. So thanks.
Thank you. Good.
Talking about the Roth IRA.
Okay.
I've got a couple of stocks I'm looking at putting into my Roth. Most of my stuff's in index funds, but I like to pick a couple of stocks here and there.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, these are MLPs.
Okay.
So I've got two. I'll give you both tickers so you can tell me if they're smart or not.
Okay.
But can I put an MLP into a Roth?
Yes.
IRA. Yeah. And second, is there a tax consequence on, somebody said if I earn more than $1,000, then I'm super taxed on it or something like that. I don't know what they were talking about.
Yeah, there's tax difference on an MLP, Master Limited Partnership. Even if you put it in an IRA or Roth IRA, you're going to have to pay taxes because you are a limited partner of a company. It's like a business. You're a business partner. You're going to get what's called a K-1. A K-1. And you know what that is for tax purposes?
Yeah.
So you get a K-1 and you may have to pay, you probably have to pay taxes on it. So it's not tax-free in your Roth or IRA, the income that you're getting. You think it is, but it's not. And different MLPs have different treatments. If you have an MLP that's out of Canada, that's different tax treatment. It's even more taxed. So you have to figure out, well, what's my tax consequences if I buy this particular MLP? And to find that out, you can get that from the company if you want to find that out.
Okay. Can I give you a couple of tickers? And
sure.
You can tell me if I'm...
Give me one.
I think I'm a little late on, but AES is the first one, and EPD is the second one.
Let's take a look at AES. See what I got here. Okay, AES is engaged in the generation and distribution of electricity to over 10.5 million customers worldwide. It's not a master limited partner.
It's not.
It's a utility, pays a dividend. So this is not a master limited partnership.
Okay. Distributions are for MLPs.
Okay.
Dividends are for stocks.
Yeah. This is a dividend, pays 4.8%, which is a pretty nice dividend. Yeah, and it's not that expensive, so I think it's never going to go up huge in price, but it'll pay that 4.8% dividend probably forever. It's growing sales, okay. So it might go up in price. Okay? Appreciate
it. And EPD?
EPD, now that is a master limited partner. I'm familiar with that one. Enterprise Products Partnership. A master limited partnership engaged in natural gas liquefaction, transportation, storage. So this one will be taxed differently. So make sure that you understand that 6% dividend may not end up, that's what it's been paying, may not end up being a dividend of 6% after you pay taxes on it. The insiders have been buying recently. So they kind of
I saw it went to, it was below 26 2 weeks ago, and it's over 28 now.
Yeah.
So I'm afraid I might have missed the write-up.
Well, it's possible. It's on the higher end of its cost. The P.E. ratio is 22, but it's also growing. It's earning 7 to 10% and growing sales 16 to 20%. So it deserves a little higher P.E. I don't know if you missed it yet, per se. And it's got pretty good numbers. It's actually a pretty decent company to buy.
It looks like I said, I should have bought it 2 weeks ago when I first saw it, and I've kind of been watching to see if it had bottomed out, and it looks like it has. Yeah, my big concern is my wife has no concern for retirement. She's and I don't know how to help her understand. You need to pay attention to what I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah. Believe I have. I hate to say it, but my wife doesn't either. She just trusts that I'm taking care of everything. But I said, what if I die? You need to know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so yeah. When I figure out how to overcome that, I'll let you know. Thanks, Will.
Well, I'll get more information from you later.
Okay. Appreciate the call. Thank you. So how should you save for your child's college education? Both Series 1 savings bonds and Section 529 college savings plans offer tax advantages, you know, for college saving. What are the merits of a prepaid tuition plan? Do you know what that is? That's part of a 529 now. You can prepay tuition. These are offered by the states, these 529 plans. They have their disadvantages, but it may be something to look into. Do you have questions about the 529 plan? Or maybe the Coverdell. Do you know what that is? Coverdell is another college or educational plan. Let's talk about it. Ask your questions. 888-99-CHART.
Why not invest a few minutes and check out our book section on investtalk.com? Besides Steve's book, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor, you'll see a whole catalog of titles that have been personally selected to help you improve not only your investing knowledge and know-how, there are books that will expand your perspective too. Visit the book section on investtalk.com. Books that should be in your library.
888-99-CHART. So 888-992-4278 is our number that you can call anytime you want. Besides the S&P and the Dow and that are making new record highs, and I told you some of the flaws in the indexes, there's also some other records that I think are significant. For instance, for the S&P, they've gone 387 days without a pullback of 5% or more. 387 days without a pullback of 5% or more. When did that happen before? Well, in 1994 to 1996, there was a 394-day period where that happened. Okay, now we're at 387. So on January 18th, it'll beat the old record. However, there's another record. There has been no 3% pullback since November of 2016. Since November 2016, not even a 3%. That is the longest. So what does this tell you? We've had a very long period of a very quiet market, moving up, but with very little pullbacks. That's a pretty, I mean, when you got to go back to 1994 to 96 to come up with that same, to break that kind of record, you have to admit that it's pretty darn unusual. Now, does it mean it can does it mean anything? Can you say, okay, you can say, we're way overdue for a pullback. But it still hasn't happened. Still hasn't happened. I can say that 2018 probably is going to be a lot more volatile than 2017 because 2017 had no volatility. And there were reasons for it to have volatility. I thought 2017 would be a pretty volatile year. But the volatility is always on the upside, never on the downside. And you really can't say, you know, when I talk about volatility, I mean both up and down in the same period, not just one way. So I was wrong the beginning of last year stating that I think we're going to see some more volatility than the year before. And even the year before, we had some volatility, but not that much. So we're looking at a very long time without much volatility. That'll end someday. I just can't tell you when. What do you think? Anyways, let's go to Jay in Fremont. How you doing, Jay?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for the call.
Steve, I have a question on Campbell Soup's CPB. It's right now at 52-week low. I'm wondering if it's a good buy right now. Thank you.
I think someone called about that the other day. I said it looks like it might have tried to put in a bottom, because it had 3 or 4 days up in a row. And, of course, now it fell hard today, 3%. So, obviously, it still has not put in a bottom. You have to wait till it puts in that bottom. And it looks like the bottom should hold about $44.50 to $45. because that's it's been there three or four or five times in a year and bounced up. So I have a feeling that's where you're going to go. You know, low 45 or the high 44 is 44.50 or so. So you want to wait to show some strength. It started to show some strength going up 4 days in a row, but then it lost all of that today and even more so. So I think, and I don't know what the news was. It probably might have been earnings. I don't know because we're moving into earnings season here. Might have been earnings. And everybody knows who Campbell Soup, CPD, is. And their problem is their sales are flat. No one's buying any soup. But they do have more than just soup. They have Mexican sauces and broths and, you know, ready-to-eat servings of different things and not just soup. But I think you got to be patient. I think it's, you know, it's really near its low. But I want to see some strength come into the stock before you buy it. And I thought as of yesterday with four straight up days, well, maybe this is the strength that we're looking at. But no, apparently not. So I still think you need to be calm. Jay, don't buy it yet, okay?
All right, thank you.
Thank you for the call. Tom, San Ramon, how you doing, Tom?
I'm doing well, Steve. How about yourself?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
I had a couple questions for you about two bond funds that I own in my rollover IRA.
Uh-huh.
As I've gotten older, I'm 74 now, I'm a little more sensitive to risk, so I'm trying to persuade myself to buy bond type things.
Uh-huh.
And I've been fairly consistent about putting money into FAGIX, which is a Fidelity high income fund. And it seems to have performed very well, but I'm not sure with interest rates on the way up like they seem to be, at least in the future, how that's going to affect that fund.
That's going to affect it a lot because it's a junk bond fund, okay? Meaning that the bonds inside, you'd have to look them up, but I'm pretty sure just by the title of the bond fund that these are junk bonds. And therefore, junk bonds are very susceptible to interest rate rises and the economic cycle. So they're kind of on the higher end of the risk scale, Tom. So the risk scale meaning a bond risk scale, okay? Bond. So you probably would want to maybe cycle out of that. But if you still want to be kind of conservative, go into a Vanguard bond fund, maybe a 3 to 5 year bond fund. 3 to 5 year meaning that's what their maturity rate. And they will even with interest rates going up, they should do pretty well. I think interest rates are going to go up pretty slowly, so you should roll into that, and that would be a bit more secure if you're nervous about the junk bond. I got to go.
Like Vanguard fund. Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, Tom. I got to go. I'm really pushed. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley. The number 888-99-CHART is our direct line. 888-992-4278. Okay, the facts about money for young people, young adults under 35 years old. The median income is about $45,000. 50% have credit card debt. The balance is about $1,400. 42% of them have retirement accounts, 42. And the median amount is $12,300. That's the facts. So they don't make a lot of money. They don't have a tremendous amount of credit card debt, but they do have debt. And these are people 35 years old or less. And they have about $12,300 saved up for retirement. Now, what to do about it? There's kind of four things you could do that are pretty simple, even if you're young. First of all, make sure you establish an emergency fund. Start there. And this is money that's very liquid, and it usually comprises of maybe 3 months of your earnings put away in a savings account, a bank savings account, something very liquid, not the stock market, so that if you have an emergency, you have it available. Many people don't have emergency funds. I don't get that. Number two, pay down your high credit card or other kind of debt. The high interest rate you're paying. Pay that down. Start with the highest and start knocking that off because it's costing you a fortune. If you're paying 14 to 15%, that's 14 to 15% you're not putting away for retirement. Okay, so get rid of that. Number three, spend less than you earn. I don't know how many times I've said that over my lifetime. Spend less than you earn. It's that simple. You can then just invest the rest. That's it. Spend less than you earn. That means if you use that credit card all the time, that you pay that off every month and you still have money left over. Spending less than you earn doesn't mean, well, I spent my paycheck, but I put it on my credit card. That's not spending less. Okay, and finally, save more money for retirement. The earlier you save, the less you'll have to save later on in your life, and the more money you'll have. When you get to 65, you do not want to be worrying about, can I afford to retire? Remember, I've talked about stats where people think, well, I just won't retire. I like what I do. I'll just keep working. You are like 60% of people not working in their older age want to work, but they can't. Either age discrimination, or they just don't have the skills, or they don't have the physicality to do it, something. So don't try to prepare for that. Now let's try to answer one more question. 888-99-CHART is our number. It's our 24-hour listen line number.
Hi, my name is Dave. I'm from San Jose. Listen to your program regularly. Love it, learn a lot. Today I'm mostly out of the market and want to know if I should start dollar cost averaging in or wait a little longer, and whether it's a good time to buy Intel, INTC. Thank you.
Well, Intel is finally it's rolling over. It's had a very good run. I think, and it's had some bad publicity recently. I think you need to wait on it. It's not done falling. It fell 2.5% today, down to $42. You have to wait. They're going to make $3.26 next year. This year, they haven't got the final numbers in, but about the same amount next year. So they're not really growing their earnings anymore. And sales have been growing in the single digits, but their sales growth rate has been slowing down in recent quarters. So it may have done its run. You just have to wait till it falls and stops falling, moves sideways for a month or two, then you buy it. You don't buy it now. Even though it's not that expensive, it's not, but you just don't buy it now. You wait till it stops falling. There's been some bad numbers out there talking about, their chips and the next generation of chips and whether Intel has fallen behind or not. So just be patient with it. Time to wrap it up, everybody. A reminder, if you're not clear, if you're not near our California offices, I can meet with you via Skype or telephone for a one-on-one retirement portfolio review if you like. It's pretty easy. Also, I will be in San Jose for individual meetings on February 7th. If you'd like to set up a time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab, then portfolio review. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Justin Klein and myself and the whole KPP family, thank you for listening, and let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.